Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual. We're on Radio MD and iHeart, which you obviously know because you found a way of downloading us. Thank you. Please do download us and rate us weekly. As we say, 50,000 downloaders can't be that wrong, and I hope we continue to entertain. You can send us emails at ageprooflife.com, and we will find the guests you want. So if you have a specific guest, please do send us information. We do have a great guest today, Eben Alexander, two guests. Eben Alexander and Karen Newell wrote the book together called Living in a Mindful Universe, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Heart of Consciousness. It started in 2008, I would guess, when neurosurgeon Eben Alexander, and the website is Eben Alexander, E-B-E-N, Alexander.com, woke up in excruciating pain. I assume it's head pain. We'll find out in a few minutes, because within hal he was in a full grand mal seizure and rushed to the hospital. The diagnosis was a rare and usually fatal form of E. coli bacterial meningitis. The prognosis was grim, and he lay in a coma for 7 days, giving the doctors less and less hope. But despite that, he woke up, but recovered completely, and he woke up with new insights, having experienced an astonishing and spectacular journey into realms beyond the physical universe. In fact, he felt that he wrote, he felt so interested in this that he wrote, and I guess his son contributed greatly to getting him to do this, and we'll come back to that. The book that was the number one New York Times bestseller called Proof of Heaven came out in 2012 and was literally on the New York Times bestseller list for over a year. Dr. Alexander explains the profound lessons he learned from the near-death experience and were a complete revision of everything he'd come to know about science, consciousness, spirituality, and the very nature of existence. Remember, he was and is a neurosurgeon before this. Proof of Heaven, as I said, was on the New York Times bestseller list for 97 weeks, more than a year. It has been published in over 40 other countries, in 30 other languages, and this book, I think, is a outstanding expansion and follow-up on that. Living in a Mindful Universe, A Neurosurgeon's Journal into the Heart of Consciousness. Dr. Alexander and Karen Newell, thank you for both coming on.
Well, thanks for having us, Michael. It's great to be here.
Yes, thank you.
Karen, your website again is?
SacredAcoustics.com.
SacredAcoustics.com. So obviously that speaks to acoustics, speaks to hearing. Tell us how that fits with this topic.
Well, it's important to note my coma journey was one that was a big shock from a neurosurgical and neuroscientific standpoint because of the damage to my neocortex. And it was an extraordinary journey that I reported.
So neocortex, wait, you got to explain because we don't have a medical audience. So
okay.
Neocortex, what part of the brain is that?
Well, that's the outer surface of the brain. That's the part that makes us human. And that's the part that a bacterial meningitis preferentially destroys. So it's a perfect model for human death. And yet, as my neocortex, the human part of my brain, was being destroyed, my conscious awareness actually expanded greatly. And that was the big mystery to me. Now, you ask about sound. The reason sound is important is I found in 2 years or so after my coma that the only way to get a deeper explanation was to explore within consciousness. And one of the best techniques I found for doing that was using what's called binaural beat technology, differential frequency sound, where you actually intercept consciousness in the lower brainstem. And this is a technique that I've used pretty much on a daily basis to return to those realms I visited. In the Proof of Heaven story, people will recall who have read it, that sound was absolutely essential for ascending and traversing the various spiritual realms that I encountered. For example, the spinning melody of light that first ushered me up from the earth where my view, a primitive coarse unresponsive realm, into an ultra-real valley, the Gateway Valley, that was lush with life. And then angelic choirs provided yet another sound portal to higher and higher levels, all the way out into the pure infinite oneness of the core, that absolute, ineffable, loving presence of that deity in that core, that force that so many NDEers or near-death experiencers have described, was also something I associated with sound. In that case, it was the sound of Aum, this resonance of eternity and infinity. So sound is absolutely crucial, both in my NDE story and in my ability to return to it. And of course, that's what is of value to other people, because you don't have to have an NDE to experience all this. You can do it through meditation, and differential frequency sound enables people to get into very deep transcendental states so that they can discover all of this for themselves.
Now, let me go and ask some basic questions that the neuroscientist in me would ask, if you will, and say, what's the, you obviously had part of your brain disturbed, if not destroyed, and have done studies on that with what we would call MRI or imaging, I assume.
Correct.
What happened to that part of your brain? Did it regrow? And tell us, and what I'm trying to get into is the differential between that destruction of brain and what happens in dementia and how those differ.
Well, this kind of meningitis generally doesn't allow anybody to recover. My doctors estimated by the end of my week in coma, I was down to a 2% chance of survival with no chance of recovery at all. So they were quite shocked when I started coming back to this world on that seventh day. But in fact, they were correct. My brain was absolutely savaged. I had no words or language. I had no memories of my life before coma. None of my religious beliefs or scientific knowledge of more than 25 years spent in neurosurgery. Everything was gone. All I knew when I came back to this world was where I had been. I did not even recognize my loved ones, my mother, my sons, and my sisters standing at the bedside. I mean, my brain was absolutely wrecked. And that was a big part of
it. And when you say wrecked, you imaged it. And was how much of the neocortex was destroyed?
Well, the entire neocortex was involved with this. Every bit of it was swollen. There was pus filling all the valleys, you know, between the gyri of my brain. My brain stem was badly damaged. I mean, it really was a devastating illness. And recently, Dr. Bruce Grayson has done a review of my medical records with three independent physicians and basically confirmed what my two neurologists who covered my case said at the end of it all was how shocked they were that I recovered. It was 2% chance of survival, so that's not a miracle, but they didn't expect any chance of coming back to this world. But within 8 weeks, everything had come back. My words and language came back over hours and days. My all of my memories of life before my coma came back over many weeks. All of my semantic knowledge of cosmology, physics, neuroscience, neurosurgery came back over about 8 weeks. And that was the big shocker. And there's no explanation in Western medicine for that kind of full recovery.
And now what is the difference between that state and I guess, when the brain changes, when someone has a disease such as one of the dementias?
Well, this would just be, you know, much, much worse. If a dementia ever takes you into full-blown coma where you have no response to the world at all, that's the kind of dementia that I was facing. I mean, my neocortex was horrifically damaged, which was apparent from the neurologic exam, MRI scans, and CT scans that showed that all eight lobes of my brain were affected. And the neurologic exams actually had not only extensive damage to the neocortex, but also tremendous damage to the brain stem itself, even on the first day.
Now, let me, what I'm trying to get at, and this is just a question that I have, in fact, is dementia more a, if you will, because it affects the hippocampus, a deep part of the brain, usually different than this, and is the, and when you get to the near-death experience, you have some vivid memories and visions of what happened. Is that because the, if you will, in your mind, the brainstem survives and is part of this near-death experience and different from the neocortex, which clearly couldn't have survived very well initially? It had to regrow.
Well, this is the point that I go into in Proof of Heaven, and then much more extensively in the new book, Living in a Mindful Universe, is there was no place in my brain for the experience to happen. This was not a hallucination. It was not a dream. It was not a drug effect. It was far more real than this world. And it all happened at a time when my doctors documented full well that my brain could not have produced any such conscious awareness at all. So it points out what modern neuroscience and philosophy of mind is coming to realize. The brain does not produce consciousness. It is a filter. We are conscious in spite of our brain. But my experience simply confirms other scientific studies, specifically on psychedelic drug experiences done at several centers around the world in the last 5 years, that show that the more profound the psychedelic experience, the more the brain is turned off.
More with Dr. Michael Roizen and the You, the Owner's Manual podcast coming up. Here's the deal. To truly thrive in all areas of your life, you cannot ignore the importance of good health. I've learned this firsthand, and for many of us, time is our most valuable asset. This is why I love Organifi Green Juice, an organic superfood green juice powder you just add water to get your greens anytime, anywhere without the mess. Plus, you can now enjoy Organifi Red Juice Powder too. When you invest in your health, you gain more time because you have more energy and focus to get through your day. The best thing about Organifi Green and Red Juice is that it actually tastes good. Try it for yourself. Use the code YOU, Y-O-U, at Organifi.com. That's O-R-G-A-N-I-F-I.com. Once again, use the code YOU. That's Y-O-U to receive 20% off your order at Organifi.com. And You, the Owner's Manual podcast is brought to you by Memory Rescue, the brand new book that can help you with your memory. Let's hear from its author.
Hi, I'm Dr. Daniel Amen, author of a new book called Memory Rescue. Memory Rescue teaches you how to prevent future problems, but if you're having memory problems now, how to rescue it, how to get it back so that everything in your life can be better. Plant the habits that I talk in your life. I know it'll make a dramatic difference for you and for those you love.
It's important that you receive this information. Get your copy of Memory Rescue by Dr. Daniel Amen. Learn more at memoryrescuebook.com. That's memoryrescuebook.com. And now back to Dr. Michael Roizen and the You, the Owner's Manual podcast.
Now, let me go to the, you do believe, and in here we talk about, you talk about reincarnation and the proof that there is such a event as reincarnation. Talk to us a little bit more about that, or Karen maybe talk to us about that.
Well, there's a lot of scientific evidence for reincarnation, and a lot of it stems from the work at University of Virginia, where they have studied more than 2,500 cases of past life memories in children. These are children who remember things happening to them in another lifetime, and they've documented, found the families. A very modern case in the U.S. is the case of James Leninger, who remembers being in an airplane and being shot down in Iwo Jima. And they were able to track down people that he knew back when he was this other person. And this is all documented in a book called Soul Survivor. This is just part of the evidence that shows that our consciousness exists beyond death. Mediumship research also has pointed to the survival of souls beyond death. And scientifically, you know, a lot of our modern materialist scientists won't acknowledge that this science is valid, but it is valid. And there's amazing results out of the Winbridge Institute in Tucson, where I think they have something like an 85% success rate of mediums in a quintuple blind test that show they are able to contact the souls of people's departed loved ones very successfully. And all of this points to the reality of reincarnation, that our souls, the energy part of us, survives physical death and goes on to experience an afterlife and ultimately another existence in a physical body.
As we're beginning to, and I'm going to go in a weird direction now, and so you can tell me, let's get back to the book area, and the book is those of us in hard science would call a very mind-opening or mind-bending and mind-enlarging book. It's called Living in a Mindful Universe, A Neurosurgeon's Journal into the Heart of Consciousness by Eben Alexander, and it's ebenalexander.com and Karen Newell. It seems to those of us who look at what's going to happen with aging and people as we enlarge the aging pool or enlarge the pool of people living longer, that reincarnation is kind of on the border of, if you will, infinite length of life. That is, if you can get reincarnated, maybe you could live forever and see things 200 or 300 years from now. Tell us what your thoughts about this, Dr. Alexander.
Well, I think this is really kind of right at the core of what we talk about in Living in a Mindful Universe, and that is that each and every one of us is far more than just a physical body living birth to death in one incarnation. We are all participants in a grand evolution of consciousness. And the evidence for this is really very strong in a scientific sense. It has everything to do with the mind-brain connection, that relationship between mind and brain. And, of course, some people might think neuroscience is on the verge of describing how the brain creates consciousness, whereas, in fact, just the opposite is true. Neuroscience and philosophy of mind are coming to realize that consciousness is fundamental. Just as quantum physicists have told us for almost 100 years, consciousness is fundamental in the universe. And the brain is not the producer of consciousness at all. In fact, it's better to look at consciousness as what creates all of the emergent physical universe. And it's an extraordinary kind of reversal of the worldview that I held for the first 54 years of my life and that all of conventional science has held for centuries. And yet this is inevitable all over the deep study of consciousness and what it really means. So, in fact, you're right. Consciousness is eternal, and our souls come back again and again, all in a process of refinement and learning and teaching as all of consciousness evolves. And each and every one of us is part of that process. And the greatest gift of this book and this kind of thinking for the individual human being is this really returns power to each of us as individuals in determining the course of our lives, of our health, of coming to realize that our relationships with other souls are part of this tremendous tapestry of existence over multiple lifetimes. And it's a very exciting time to be alive and studying all this, and it's really the only way forward for science or spirituality to come to acknowledge this extraordinary vision, which really quantum physicists were trying to push on us for 80 years or so, but conventional physicists had no way of understanding. But now with the advent of this kind of new understanding, the notion of the brain as a filter, a reducing valve that allows primordial consciousness in, we can come to realize how each and every one of us has tremendous power by going within consciousness to manifest the world of our dreams.
Now, let me ask you something that the person and my producer here in locally in Cleveland, I'm at the Cleveland Clinic, my producer here has suggested asking and says, what determines how fast you come back? That is, how fast you're reincarnated or not? And what limits the number of people on Earth, or is there... Is everyone reincarnated, or are many people born again, born anew, if you will? Or how does that whole thing work, if you
will?
Well,
I would, for one thing, I would be
a very physical question, I guess.
Right. Well, this is not like counting the number of angels who can dance on the head of a pin. So it's not like there's a limited number of souls involved. Now, the other thing is this consciousness is not just limited to human beings. This is a consciousness that pervades all living systems, not just on Earth, but all sentience throughout the cosmos. So it's a much bigger deal than just trying to figure out what's going on with human beings on Earth. But to get right to your question of the timing, if you look at the work from the University of Virginia, first from Ian Stevenson in the 60s, 70s, 80s, more recently from Jim Tucker, as Karen said, 2,500 cases plus of past life memories in children, they generally find that the reincarnations occur within a few years, although that number can be quite a bit greater, you know, decades and even centuries. So I don't think that there are any real limiting facts on that.
In those cases, though, the children, usually they found the children who actually remember their past life have usually died a sudden and early death. And this seems to be a factor in them wanting to come back more quickly. I don't think these kinds of questions are very easy to answer because it's so challenging to really validate every one of our past life experiences. Yet we're compelled to ask these kind of questions because we think somehow they're answerable. So it's really kind of a matter of exploring within your own consciousness and trying to come to find out your own personal past lives. It's challenging to answer hard and fast how it happens for everyone because we're all so unique and have different reasons, different purposes for coming to Earth in a particular time frame.
And one thing that Karen is referring to there is the whole burgeoning field of transpersonal psychology, where people have done past life regressions and between life regressions, really for personal growth and to understand problems they may face in their life today that become much clearer when they realize what issues in prior lifetime led to their particular issues of today, because it's always a process of growth and of learning and of ascendance. This is not some blind mechanistic wheel of reincarnation where there's just suffering and you want to get off. It's actually a form of reincarnation in which it's all directed towards growth of the soul.
Now, you practiced neurosurgery beforehand, and you've said that one of the things I heard you say, and I may be incorrect in that, but you said that sometime around 8 weeks, your memory and your capacity for neurosurgical technique returned. That is 8 weeks later. Did you decide to, when you came, have you practiced neurosurgery since? And what do you do differently with, how do you do prepare patients differently if you do? And if you don't, I know you're into meditation, so do you routinely advise people before surgery to do that?
Well, I think, first of all, to point out, yes, you remember correctly, by about 8 weeks after my coma, all of my memories had returned. And in fact, the surprising thing that I came to realize due to detailed conversations with family and friends over the next few years is when the memories came back, they were actually more complete than they had been before the coma. And this is an important point we make in the book, Living in a Mindful Universe. Memories are not stored in the brain. That's one thing that neurosurgeons have suspected for a very long time, just because we can resect all kinds of neocortex and we never get patterns of loss of old memories. You can get into trouble in the medial temporal lobes with formation of new memories, but that's very different. The only other thing to point out in trying to answer your questions is that before my coma, I was working for the Focused Ultrasound Surgery Foundation, promoting global research in a very promising technology. And I returned to exactly that same position within 3 months after my coma and continued that. And then it turns out, though, that as things got busier with giving talks and with the first book, Proof of Heaven, back in 2012, I came to realize I did not have enough time to do all of that and do my patients justice. So I finally had to let go of my neurosurgical career in terms of active clinical practice about 4 months before my before Proof of Heaven came out.
And now there probably are patients who consult you before they undergo surgery. What do you tell them?
Well, basically, all that I'm saying in Proof of Heaven, the map of heaven, and especially living in a mindful universe, which is that our brain is not the creator of consciousness. Each and every one of us is far more than that. And we can come to realize the impact of that kind of realization through meditation, through going within and connecting with that awareness, that observer within. And that's all the work that I do with Karen through Sacred Acoustics to help people get into very deep meditative states. This is a form of centering prayer. Prayer is a very powerful tool for healing. And this kind of meditation is also extremely powerful at helping us to gain health in our lives, to improve fitness, stress reduction, guidance, connection with souls of departed loved ones. I mean, meditation is a very important tool.
And the first step is really to realize we are much, much more than just our physical bodies. We've been conditioned by society to think that everything is being handled by neurons and hormones and different responses in the brain. But in fact, mind over matter is real. The placebo effect shows us that our beliefs play an incredibly powerful role. And instead of dismissing the placebo effect as something that the pharmaceutical companies need to beat, we really need to start embracing the power of the placebo effect, making people realize they are energetic beings along with physical beings, and establishing a practice of going within and learning who you are behind those thoughts. That inner observer is the first step, really, to realizing the power that each and every one of us has.
You're listening to the authors, Eben Alexander and Karen Newell, of Living in a Mindful Universe, a consciousness expanding book, I guess I would say. And obviously they have some profound thoughts that, at least in my reading the book, leaves me with more questions, more thoughts, more interest than answers. And I guess that is appropriate for this. Eben Alexander, Karen Newell, thanks very much for coming on You, the Owner's Manual podcast. Actually, this is, I think, your third time on, so I really appreciate it. You did come on for Proof of Heaven, and I think the Map of Heaven as well. So I thank you for continuing to enrich the audience and the audience experience, and broaden our our vision of the world. One of these days, I've got to ask you, since it isn't obvious to me, if we don't store memories in the brain, where do we store them, and why is the hippocampus size so important to that? But that will have to come. That I'm going to have to, unfortunately, we'll have to find out more at a later time.
A lot of the answers are actually in the book. So thank you, Michael. Great to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the book is Living in a Mindful Universe. Randall, thanks for great engineering. And thank you for downloading us and hopefully rating us. We'll be back next week with a new guest. Wonderful guest. Thanks very much. See you then.